Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am very glad to be back again with Dom, who is in New York City right now. Dom, how's New York?
It's great, and you didn't ask how I'm doing, but I'll tell you anyway. I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I was going to get to that. We have plenty of time here. I'm sure this is going to be a very short podcast today, I would imagine, Dom.
Well, given that the next episode drops in like less than 48 hours, we should probably keep it on the low side. But we always say that, and we know how that turns out.
Yeah, so. this episode coming to you later than we definitely intend to be recording most weeks. But Dom was in transit from Boston to New York when I had my free time off from work, and then he lost his phone on the subway like a champion that he is.
We don't need to bring all of our listeners into that drama, okay? We could, as funny as that may have been. So we actually met in person for the first time last week for the premiere of the season at Aubrey's premiere party in Boston, which was just a fantastic event. Obviously much better with having you there, of course, goes without saying. That was actually the first time I've watched an episode of Survivor with anyone else in the room. As sad as it sounds, in the past it's always been just like me at 1 a.m. alone, you know, which is a sign of my commitment to the show and how much I enjoy watching it that I'm able to stick it out through that. But yeah, so much better when you're in the room with other people who are as obsessive about it as you are. And like, we were in this crowded bar with 60 or 70 other people, many of whom were like Aubrey's friends and family, so the whole room was like cheering for her. And so it's really weird, like, when the whole room has a vested interest in one person doing well. So like, Aubrey would just flash up on the screen momentarily and these cheers would go off in the background, right? And then when she got votes at the second tribal, there was like this collective gasp, even though everyone knew on some level that it probably didn't mean anything. But we were just like, and there was this sense of like, if this actually somehow went wrong, the whole room would just fall into this like silence. It was a really good atmosphere to be around. And we got to meet other like hardcore Survivor fans in the area for the first time, who we kind of knew from online and become friends with, but hadn't actually got to put faces to those names yet, and got to meet Aubrey herself, obviously, and she was great. So yeah, that whole thing was a fantastic experience. I want to thank everyone who was there for just making that possible.
Yeah, I had a very great time there at Aubrey's premiere party. That was a ton of fun. It was excellent getting to meet you in person, Dom. And actually, I know you're going to be in New York for episode 2, and then I will be in New York for episode 3 for the Live Know-It-Alls. So anyone who wants to meet Dom in person themselves, if they're going to be at the Live Know-It-Alls, Dom will be there as well. So that's going to be very, very exciting. And I think Aubrey's premiere party was really just kind of like a micro version, honestly, of a Live Know-It-Alls. There were a bunch of survivors there too, primarily co-wrongers, but plenty of other people and her friends and family and just some other big fans from around the area. That was a ton of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And if that's just like the warm-up act for Know-It-Alls, then I honestly can't wait. And that's going to be excellent. But yeah, if you're in New York and for some reason you do feel like saying hi, introducing yourself, please do. I mean, we're always eager to meet fans of this show or the show or just our favorite show, Survivor, or just anyone who wants to talk to us about anything. Please. Yeah, we're really eager to meet people.
Yeah, definitely. So Dom, I think the only other thing that we want to be getting to before we dive into this big premiere episode is something I'm sure plenty of people are already aware of, which is over at RHAP. They are doing this 32 Survivor Winners March Madness style bracket tournament that we were fortunate enough to be involved in on like the judging panel on the Survivor Supreme Court. So what we actually ended up doing, and they referenced this briefly on the show, but we can confirm that this did in fact happen. We have been sitting on a podcast for a little while that goes through all of our rounds of deliberation. We already know what most of the results are going to be. And so you guys, once next Sunday comes around, and Rob releases the second part of that. We certainly don't want to release this ahead of time and spoil everything before that. But once that goes up, we will release our companion podcast to that, and you guys can hear at least our takes for all of those matchups the entire way through the tournament.
Yeah, that was a ton of fun. And we haven't actually done a lot of comparative stuff recently, like ranking winners, ranking seasons, anything like that. So it was fun to just get back into that general kind of analysis again.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dom, do you have anything else that you want to be getting into before we dive into this premiere?
Let's get right down to it.
All right. And I do want to say, anyone who has, you know, been a longtime listener of the show, this will not be a big surprise. We are people who do look at the edit. If that is something you are super averse to, this may not be the podcast for you. But I will say the very good news is, Dom, for me, the real game changer has been Ken. Ken's edit last season, obviously, completely fooled me hook, line, and sinker the entire time. I was all in on Ken has to be the winner. I think they have finally shown, hey, we hear what you guys are saying about the edit. We are finally willing to mix it up. They have shown me they are capable of just triple barreling me and never letting go of the story they're trying to tell me about Ken. I am totally thinking that this season there is going to be nothing that could happen, I would imagine, other than just one single person running away with it so unanimously where anything could come up that I would be along even close to those lines.
So after Michelle and Ken match back, I was thinking you would think, okay, it's best of three. We can see like this could be the tiebreaker season to see if you're actually on point with any of this. But it sounds like you're already getting kind of gun-shy about just the entire basis of your edit reading philosophy.
I mean, I wouldn't call it gun-shy. I just feel like all last season I was saying the reason that I'm so all in on Ken is I have never seen them show me that they are capable of this being a bluff. They've shown me now that they are capable of Ken's edit being a bluff. And there have been very few people that I've been, you know, a believer in to the same extent that I was in Ken. So maybe gun-shy is a somewhat apt word, but I'm far more willing, I would say, to be open to the idea that things are far less certain than they ever otherwise seemed.
So it's not gun-shy in an absolute sense? You're not just shoving all in on one person after 10 minutes of the first episode this time?
Well, I mean, I was kind of shoving all in on Michaela before, you know, before the season had even started this season.
Walking that back pretty quickly. So am I to... Well, that wasn't even editing analysis, right? That was just like some Dan Brown Da Vinci Code style conspiracy theory based on all of these pre-season preview clues.
Well, no, it was somewhat edit analysis. It was a mix of her edit on season 33. Like, if she had gone on to win season 34, please know that would play a major role in how she is presented on season 33. And it was combined with that and Jeff at the reunion seemed to not be able to get to Michaela fast enough or often enough or be complimentary enough of her. That's why I was like, okay, well, clearly they are trying to make Michaela someone very fresh and very positive in the casual viewer's mind. And we will definitely talk more about that later because I have some updated takes there. Definitely not going to be pushing all in on Michaela as the future winner anytime soon, I would say, after this premiere, but we'll see.
All right, so I look forward to taking you to account for that when we get to it. But where do we want to start with this actual premiere episode then?
Okay, well, I think it's always important to track this opening sequence. I know the point that I basically always make at the start of every season is if you rewatch the older seasons, with the benefit of hindsight, so often it is the case that the people that are being highlighted right away in the season premiere, far more often than not, at least overall, for my admittedly partially hazy recollection of a lot of these seasons at this point, it just feels like these are often the major players. And granted, in an all-star season, I think that may be a little different. Like, for instance, we start with Tony, who introduces himself again to the audience saying, you know, I came last time to Kageyan, I made these huge moves, essentially tells us, hey, I'm a huge threat, and basically lists through all the reasons people are eventually going to go on to vote him out right away here. I think this, in an all-star context, is Tony might be the top of the list of most recognizable people on this cast for the casual audience and the people that they're most quickly going to have a big reaction towards.
And when the sequence is done well, it often incorporates a lot of the people that you would expect to get that kind of treatment anyway, as well as some of the more obscure members of the cast. And so when you do have 10 to 15 people all getting meaningful content at this stage, it's more about who doesn't get that. And then that becomes a major disqualifying feature, if you like.
Right. And more on that later, because I have really I've laid out pretty beat by beat this opening sequence, and there are only a couple of people who ended up not getting anything before the first immunity challenge, and I think that is a pretty big indicator. I think it's quite rare that those couple of people, with your Tina Wessons accepted, I guess, are going to go on to be the eventual winners. And right off the bat here, we get Tony, as mentioned, we get Malcolm second, we get Sandra, we get Sari, and then Debbie of all people. But the first four, at least, I think make a lot of sense of, okay, these are the big star names that they brought back to be the big draws for this season. Of course, they're going to lead off with these people.
Yeah, so Malcolm, for instance, begins by saying he's so excited he can't stop bouncing in his seat, which is suddenly how I felt when I was watching the premiere in Boston, suddenly how I think a lot of the fans felt when they saw Malcolm was back again, and how I think the whole Survivor fan base collectively felt about this premiere while they were watching it.
Yeah, Malcolm was someone that I've, you know, back when he was Malcolm 1.0, I was a huge Malcoholic. I loved Malcolm. I was rooting for him in Caramoan. I don't know what happened. Like, for whatever, I think Malcolm just became too popular for me to be okay with liking him that much. And, like, I just being the level 3 hipster that I am, I had to come down on Malcolm and start giving him a hard time. I think the same thing happened with Tyson to me, to a certain extent. But as soon as I saw Malcolm, I was, like, back in love with Malcolm immediately.
I can't wait for Malcolm to have his heel turn, his fall from grace, for like some random tweet from like May 2011 to be unearthed, which makes everyone hate him again, and then you can start loving him properly the way you were always meant to.
I think that's right. I think that's right. We get Sandra and Ciri. Ciri, interestingly, I thought, said, "I've made it to the end. The only next step is to win." Ciri has not made it to the end by my calculation. She's never sat at the final tribal council. Maybe she means I've made it, you know, very essentially made it to the end. But I thought that was at least interesting that they, at least from my perspective, are setting it up for Ciri as winning is the only thing that is going to make a difference for me. I think that is a good sign for Ciri that they're saying winning is the only next step for me.
I think what she meant by that and what a lot of people would certainly agree with her on is that she effectively got to the end of Micronesia and had the rug pulled out from underneath her by the producers with that last minute switch to the final two. So maybe still some resentment there from her. And I think from a lot of Ciri fans who think that she should be one of the four winners in this cast if things had all gone according to plan there.
Yeah. And then what did you make of Debbie, if anything, being in this opening montage? Or is it just she's from a recent season, people are going to immediately remember quirky Debbie?
Debbie is nuts, has a very distinctive confessional style, always says borderline hilarious, borderline offensive things, and so you have to put Debbie in there. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
The thing for me to go to the idea of it says more about who's not in there, it feels to me like that might be the spot where they would put in Aubrey if there was a big reason to be paying attention to Aubrey, because she, I think, would be a much bigger and much... I think Aubrey might be, frankly, the most recognizable person for the actual CBS casual. I think she is the one who is going to click the fastest of, oh, I remember and I really like her.
And also some of these Nuku people, as the editors, knowing that you're not going to give them too much treatment in this premiere where they never go to tribal council and most of the action's happening at Romana, if there's someone over there that you want to highlight, this would be the perfect time to do that. So
okay.
If there's someone on there that doesn't get that, then that's a pretty damning sign for me.
Right. Debbie is, I believe, pretty invisible for the rest of this episode. So maybe this is a perfect spot to, hey, we want to show people that, hey, Debbie, we got some big characters back on this season. She's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And where else are we going to put her at this point? There's just so much going on.
Are you on the Debbie train now? Is this your hot take that Debbie Wanner is your Game Changers All-Star winner?
We'll see. We'll see if that train starts coming around to the station. I don't know just yet, Dom. I don't think I can commit to that just yet. All right. So then we get, after those five, we get the just generic Jeff Probst voiceover about how they've all changed the game and now they're all back for redemption or whatever. And then we get a very short clip of Brad Culpepper saying that, hey, this, you know, to win this game, it's go big or go home. And that leads us into 39 days, 20 people, one survivor intro song. What'd you make of Brad Culpepper there, though, just getting quickly just inserted?
Yeah, that was kind of curious. Maybe he's just like production favorite, Jeff Probst favorite, that they want to give him like the generic quote that anyone could have got. But I thought this whole opening sequence in general felt a little bit muted to me. And maybe this is when I was watching it live, it's so hard to really focus on everything in the moment because you're surrounded by all these people and you can't really hear the show all that well and so on. And so a lot of this I'm only picking up on the first time rewatching it when you don't have that same kind of atmosphere going on as you're watching it live. So maybe everything was just going to feel a bit dampened down by comparison. But this, for an All-Star season, this felt a bit kind of going through the motions to me. I don't know if you got the same feeling.
Well, let's see. The original All-Star season, we had all of them coming in on like the boats separately, but I don't think anything could compare to that of like just the sheer hype around the first Survivor All-Stars was just insane. That was always going to be mega build-up leading into that like intro for that season.
Well, or even just like Heroes versus Villains, where you had helicopters coming in, and that was
I was gonna roll through them and say Heroes versus Villains with the helicopters, I think, really sets that apart. And then Cambodia with all of them walking through the temple, I think, is really cool.
Right, but this just felt like a generic introduction, but it didn't have the same sense of novelty almost that a generic introduction would. So maybe that's the sticking point for me.
Yeah, well, to go back to quickly just it being Brad Culpepper in there, maybe not Debbie Wanner being my winner pick anytime soon, but Brad Culpepper, our charity player of the season that no one wanted to draft. I think I may be a little higher on Brad Culpepper now, Dom. I think there may be some reason to believe in Brad Culpepper.
If you could buy Culpepper for 50 cents, you would take him up on that?
I would snatch it up. Actually, I don't want to take the money away from charity, but I would be very interested in knowing what Brad Culpepper, if we could re-auction him right now after the premiere, I think he would probably go for $4 or $5 easily when the total prize pool is over $100.
So, first of all, don't lie. You love nothing more than snatching money away out of the hands of dying children. But I think you're right that, yeah, Brad... I don't know if he really has that much of a chance to win, but I think he's going to redeem himself this season. And there's been some debate about whether he has that much to redeem himself for, that maybe he actually got a bad rap the first time around. But either way, I think like, yeah, $50 or 50 cents. Well, I think $50 would be a bit extreme. 50 cents would be a perfectly good price to pay for him at this point.
Oh, I mean, 50 cents would be a total steal. There's $108 to whoever gets the winner. I think, you think Brad Culpepper doesn't have whatever half a percentage point of equity?
Just for those keeping score at home, how much of that was taken out of the prize pool after today, and who's how is that distributed?
Okay, so to quickly, since I don't know when this is going to come back up, yes, my team took kind of a beating after this premiere. Of that $108, $20 of it is already gone because I spent $8.50 on Sierra Easton, and I spent $11.50 on Tony Vlachos. So that is not going so well for me so far. Okay, so we get the theme song after that. Jeff welcomes the people all to the season. Hey, it's Survivor Game Changers. Everyone applauds. And this is essentially like the Matt chat, so to speak, to start the season off. And he's going to toss some questions to a couple of players. And we are going to first hear from Ozzy, who says he still has dreams about losing the millions of dollars that he's ended up losing, you know, come so close to in Cook Islands and then again in South Pacific, but that he's always going to love the game. Are you excited, Dom, to see Ozzy 4.0 back here? Did this have you fangirling all over the place?
I am as thrilled as Ozzy ever seems to be about anything, because the man, the one relatable quality about the man for me is that he just doesn't really emote ever. So I relate to him on that level. I wonder if Jeff also went around all the other people who just blew it at the last minute to ask what their thoughts were. So, you know, Malcolm, you were Shaky the Clown for one point. Does that still resonate with you like 5 years later or whatever? Like, he really could just, hammer the nails in. But he seems to move on pretty quickly. He moves on to JT, who said JT starts calling his shot that Sandra won't be the only two-time winner, which pretty weak trash talking here. Like, I was hoping Sandra would just light him up right there and then on the boat, but she politely declined, although she made up for it with Tony later.
Yeah, although Sari did end up responding to JT there. What I thought this was interesting, and this wasn't the only time we would see this season people being pretty public about their intentions in spots that historically it seems like many have wanted to keep their cards straight, closer to the vest. Like, later on, we'll talk about Sierra just throwing people's names out there in a group of like six people on day one. And I know that there were probably a lot of, you know, I'm sure she wasn't the only one talking about who the vote might be on. But JT here right off the bat, really reminding people, hey, I'm JT. I've won this game before and I'm here to win this game again. I don't know how I feel about that for JT. I don't know if that's the mentality he wants to go in there with. Maybe that is like, in order for him to win, he needs to go in there with that kind of warrior mentality. But for me, at least, I would be hoping more to see JT kind of hoping to, as best he can, fade into the background and hope no one remembers who JT is.
You want him to say he's not a winner? Like, he's not going to be fooling anyone except maybe Caleb or someone like that. But like, I think the far more likely scenario is that Jeff realizes that JT is trying to be evasive, just tears into him right there and then, and it ends up being even more drawing attention to him than anything he could have said otherwise. So
yeah,
I don't think it really matters.
All right. And then we finally hear from Zeke, who says he wants to make sure that he earns his spot on the season. Zeke, I think, definitely already giving the producers exactly what they want. The same way I think he did early on in Millennials versus Gen X, recognizes the theme of the season and frames everything in terms of that theme.
And as a professional, you know, comedian, theater performer, and so on, he is perfectly placed to do that. And that's one reason why I actually kind of like having Zeke on the season. I know that some people are saying he's trying too hard or that this feels so like forced and artificial, but I don't know. I like that you have someone there who sincerely does want to play the game and who can use that theatrical experience to really give a voice to that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I remember we said often at the end of Millennials versus Gen X that we were surprised that it wasn't David or Jay who got the invite. But I also said, I am glad that it is Zeke who got the invite. I would much rather see Zeke at this point. I'm sure David Wright, I would love to see him play again. And Jay, I would be totally fine with seeing play again. But Zeke is someone I think could be really, really fun on a second shot. And I think he had a really good episode that we'll get to later.
And we saw a similar thing of self-perception, if you like, with Haley and Sierra, like both of whom I think know on some level that they are not in the same tier as some of these other contestants, and they really want to prove themselves on this season to show that they, you know, that their invite was deserved. For Zeke, I think he already views himself as a worthy all-star, if you like, someone who should be on a returning player season, but he really wants to elevate himself into that pantheon by, you know, winning the season or maybe pulling a Kelly Wentworth and going really deep and impressing the audience again.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So we get split into our two tribes. We are now going to what seems to be the new standard thing, scramble for supplies. It's been a long time, it seems, running that every season has started with this scramble for supplies. There is, far away from the boat, a giant toolkit hidden underwater. The first team to get someone to swim out and untie it gets the entire toolkit. The other team doesn't have a chance to get that. Is there a reason, Dom, in your opinion? We immediately see Ozzy go out, and Malcolm says, there's no reason to compete with him. JT says, Ozzy's got to do it. Is there a reason to even send someone out to try to beat Ozzy to that toolkit, or do you want to not waste the extra person?
I don't think there is, and you don't want to be the person who jumps in trying to go after Ozzy and just ends up flailing behind him hopelessly in the water while he, you know, rescues the thing on behalf of his tribe. I do think it was interesting, though, that Malcolm's comment about, oh, of course, no one can compete with Ozzy or something like that, was subtitled and very prominent. So it's like, in case anyone had forgotten why Ozzy was there or why they liked him in the first place, right? So maybe Ozzy is someone that we're meant to be watching this season for his challenge prowess, and we're going to get to watch him for quite a long time.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, I mean, Ozzy seems like someone that is typically going to have an easy time making it to the merge when most people are just trying to stay safe. Ozzy, probably the most iconic challenge competitor in the history of Survivor, and that's why he gets that kind of credit, where everyone knows it's senseless to go even try to beat Ozzy out to this toolkit, except for Beast Mode Cowboy Dom. Eventually he says, hey, Ozzy's had 5 minutes out there by himself, but I think now is the time to go try to make a move for this toolkit.
Right. If you're going to try and overturn Ozzy, jump in the first 5 seconds and hope that you can get some kind of head start on him. Don't give Ozzy a 5-minute head start to just work his magic on something which he is historically good at.
Right. Like, the conclusion should not be, oh, Ozzy's been out there for a couple of minutes, he must be really bad at whatever it is. The conclusion should be, I guess it takes a while or whatever. It shouldn't be, Ozzy's just hopeless and I can do it very quickly.
Right, or he's going to be done untying these knots before I even finish swimming out there to the platform.
Yeah, and to quickly go back to the Malcolm thing, I thought it was, I at least was giving Malcolm points for being the one shown saying the obviously correct thing. I think if you are Malcolm, and if Malcolm is someone they want to highlight and show us what a smart player within the game he is, I think it's a good place to start. Show him thinking in game terms and in obviously correct terms. All right, and then the next interesting thing, I think, from this boat, Dom, is, of course, this legacy advantage is now back in play. Andrea steps right over it, and fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas is the person who ends up getting this legacy advantage.
Yeah, and she is officially graduating to just Sierra after this episode. Yeah, there can be only one, and we know which one that's going to be now. But yeah, so Sierra, I think, forcing her own relevance, if you like, I don't know if she would have been written out of this episode entirely if this hadn't happened, or obviously it's done in retrospect knowing what's coming ahead, and so maybe this is a sign that Sierra is actually going to be a fairly important character later down the road. But you can easily imagine, right, if Sierra doesn't end up being a big character of the season and also doesn't find this advantage, she would be nowhere to be seen in this premiere, especially when her tribe doesn't go to tribal and the rest of her tribe just doesn't even really see any content at all.
Right. The reason that I'm actually stoked that it's Sierra who got this advantage is, we came into the season saying, hey, if either of Haley or Sierra Dawn Thomas is highlighted a lot in the premiere, or even slightly more visible than you would expect, be highly on the lookout for them to make a very deep run. Now there is at least a reason for them to be highlighting Sierra Dawn Thomas, even if she is not the eventual winner. I can't think of any legacy advantage holders who got an overestimated winner edit by me, but I'm sure it's happened sometime in the past, Dom. So at least for me, I'm very glad that now, whenever we see Sierra, it's not going to necessarily set off winner alarm bells for me.
Well, I'm sure Sierra is very thankful for your support, and if you show up to any viewing parties in Utah or wherever, she's going to be very happy to see you.
Yeah. And then Andrea, who just as mentioned walked right over the legacy advantage, says, hey, it's game changers. The stakes have been raised, which coincidentally, episode title goes to Andrea there. It's going to be an epic season. Game on. And then we go to, I think, our first commercial break, and that's like the big culmination of the opening sequence.
Yeah, when Andrea walked over that clue after she had exposed it, that was the first gasp that went out from the audience as we were watching. And I said to you at the time that there's some viewing party in Brooklyn which is just going completely berserk at Andrea over having missed something that obvious.
Yeah, well, I know the picture, you know, made the rounds on Twitter long before the premiere actually aired of that promotional still of Malcolm like sitting on top of the crate and Andrea trying to pull it away from him, and you could see the legacy advantage right behind them. Did you see? I'm sure you saw this, and I'm sure most people out there saw this. So we knew that it was going to be essentially out in plain sight, and that neither of them had seen it yet. But so yeah, that was definitely a very, very exciting discovery there for fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas. And interesting, let's get into the legacy advantage now. She that's not for a little while until she opens it, but just while we're on the topic, we find out that this new legacy advantage, Dom, can be played. It's once again free immunity necklace, and it can be played at either Final 13 or Final 6. And right away for me, the biggest piece of information might be, hey, I know we're merging by 13. That's huge to know that we're merging at least that early.
Yeah, my first thought actually was, oh, that means that they're going to merge at 12, and this guarantees you get to the merge if you have to use it then. But obviously that doesn't really make any sense, and you would want to, because first of all, if your tribe doesn't lose, then it just doesn't even matter at that stage. And you would want it to be in play at maybe the most important tribal of the game, and certainly the most important tribal up until that point. So yeah, definitely probably merging at 13 now. And that's a piece of information which she and only she really has access to. And you can look at the past few seasons where merging at 13 has become, I wouldn't say a common thing, but certainly a thing that can happen. But this basically locks it in. And so that's something that she can file away in the back of her mind to use as leverage, maybe, if that would swing a vote somehow down the road.
Yeah. One interesting point that they brought up on Know It Alls was it's very possible, depending on what kind of information Michaela even got as a pre-jury person, that Zeke is the only person in the game who even knows that a legacy advantage might exist. What do you think about that? Like, is Zeke going to have the kind of, maybe foresight is the wrong word because it would be happening in the moment, but is he going to put it out there to the other people? Hey, this was out there last season. We should maybe be on the lookout.
That's a very good point. I have to think that, wait, so do we know how much of a gap there was between filming of 33 ending and filming of 34 beginning?
I do not know. I would imagine it is not a quick layover. I think the idea of doing them two at a time is there's only a couple of weeks off in between.
Okay, so I imagine there's been some discussion between the contestants, or, you know, through the grapevine she may have heard. Like, I think this is a relevant detail that she would have been either learned herself or been given somehow.
Yeah, and to bring up something that we talked about in our season preview, perhaps Zeke, when giving the rundown to his Brooklyn pal Andrea Belke, mentioned the legacy advantage, and she might know about it too.
Yeah, that would be fun. Just Andrea somehow having information which she shouldn't have, and maybe someone picks up on that, and then maybe starts to piece all the clues together. I don't know.
All right. So I think let's dive into what we actually see now that we get into our tribes. They get back to camp, and I think the way that we should do this is just tribe by tribe. And we'll start with the Mana tribe. They were definitely the focus overall of this premiere. And we'll do this round by round, of course. So day one on the Mana tribe. And I'm definitely considering all of this to be almost equally valuable in my eyes as far as what kind of content people are getting. I think this is still very important. Who's getting what in the premiere episode here? And we start at Mana camp with Haley Ford, Dom. All wagers paying off. Everyone had Haley Ford being the first Mana tribe confessional, I'm sure, right? What did you make of seeing Haley and her confessional about how she's the Cobra and no one's going to see her coming? And that's basically all we got from Haley Ford this week.
Yeah, I thought it was exactly what I would expect from a Haley Ford confessional, in that I don't really know what to expect, and it's a little bit nonsensical and confusing, but also a little bit endearing at the same time. I don't know what to read into it, though. I mean, do you have any special room temperature takes on that?
I think for me, just given how little we ended up seeing from Haley later on, even when Mono went to both of the tribal councils, this was a, we need to put Haley somewhere in this episode. Hey, here's a good spot. We haven't really started a storyline on Mana yet. We'll just lead off Mana with Haley, and then we'll dive into what's actually going on Mana, just to get Haley some kind of screen time. The same way I speculated about Debbie getting that quote early on in the premiere. I think if Haley had been a much bigger character on Worlds Apart, that could have been her slot of the, we want to work them in there somewhere.
Yeah, ultimately, I don't know how much you could read into one person getting one confessional at some point in a, you know, two-episode slot. Like that I would be more surprised if someone didn't get one. And again, that would be something to look at as a very negative sign for them. I don't think that Haley getting one confessional is a reason to, you know, start raising the roof if you're a Haley fan.
No, I definitely would agree. I think it's par for the course, I would imagine, for most Haley Ford premieres in All-Star seasons. So we go over to Michaela, who says she wants to schmooze her way to victory, but really needs to control her facial expressions and says, quote, "It's very difficult for me to lie. This was an unexpectedly bad start for me, although, to bring it up right away, in the post-Ken world, anything is definitely possible. They know that we are looking for the winner to get this glowing premiere. Why not, Dom? Throw it at, like, that's what I mean when I say I don't feel like I'm whatever word you use to describe my attitude towards the Ken edit. I don't feel like that was necessarily the case. Like, I'm happy that I'm happy that we live in the post-Ken world and that I can't draw any meaningful conclusions from this.
Well, I don't think you need to descend into full-blown relativism where there's no truth anymore, there's no facts, nothing matters. You can just conjure up any theories you want and they're all equally valid. I agree that this was not a great start for her, but I think you can, you know, you can't just write that off by saying, oh, well, anything is possible now, because some things are still more possible than others, right? Like, and it's, and I think some people definitely got better premieres than Michaela did. Now you can defend her and say, well, she doesn't need to get all of this content here up front, and she has a lot of time to grow. And the whole point of a game changer season is that maybe you don't start as a fully formed winner, but you develop into that over time by changing your own game or something to that effect. But yeah, not the best. This does not scream winner to me. And if even you are jumping off the Michaela train, I'm not sure who is still left on it.
Well, I don't think I'm jumping off the Michaela train by any stretch, because what this signals to me is just visibility, which is a big factor for me. We're not damning Michaela's chances by any stretch. It's her showing self-awareness about, hey, this is what I need to do if I want to succeed. I'm a competitor. And I don't think that this is anyone saying, hey, we hate Michaela. Like, even in later on in this first half of the episode, when she was like the decoy boot, we didn't even get any speculation about, like, oh, it'd be great if Michaela left instead, from anyone but Sierra.
Yeah, to jump ahead to one of the very few Nuku scenes we got in this premiere, I wonder if this relates to Ty and his inability to control himself when he was talking to Suri, because like Suri very quickly picked up on the fact that there was more to this whole Aussie comment than Ty really intended her to think. And I wonder if that's meant to be proof that like controlling the way you're perceived is meant to be important. And if Michaela can't control that, then that's really not a good sign for her in the long term.
Yeah. And I mean, I really want to be clear, like, I am definitely backing way off overall on this episode on the Michaela is a high likelihood winner person. I think the more thought I've put into it, the more I've come on to the idea that she may not be the winner, but is still just going to be in there deep and maybe among the front runners to be asked back extremely soon to play Survivor for a third time. So that's probably more along what I would be looking at based on this premiere. So sticking with Mana, Tony now runs off as soon as they hit the camp. As soon as they hit the beach, I guess, Tony runs away and starts looking for the idol, at which point I start clapping for him at Aubrey's premiere party, and Don had to, like, hit me on the back, like, this is not Tony's premiere party.
And also just not a great move for Tony, I think. Like, I know I cautiously agreed with you that Tony may be in such a dire position coming in that he does need to hit the ground running, literally, and just look for the idol right away, but I wonder if the story of this episode is meant to be that Tony actually did have a pretty good footing in the game, and he spewed it away by playing in this overly aggressive fashion, and that's meant to be a lesson for him and also a parable for the season moving forward.
I mean, you definitely may be right. Like, we saw Tony survive a vote, which was more than I was expecting in realistic terms out of Tony in a huge percentage of timelines here. I thought his upside was very high if he could get an idol or could get a really good tribe draw, and that's why I really strongly disagree. I think if I could, you know, if I was a video game character playing Tony, all I would be doing is digging for the idol until I end up finding it, because I feel like Tony is essentially drawing dead to make a deep run on this season without one of the hidden immunity idols. I don't think there's any fathomable way he's making it to the merge, or, you know, if he has to go to any meaningful number of votes before the merge.
Sure, but there's looking for idols, and then there's looking for idols in a very conspicuous fashion when doing so just erodes any trust you might be able to build up in other people. Because if Tony can use those connections, which he is actually very good at forming, to buy himself 3 or 6 more days, that's 3 or 6 more days he can use to look for idols if he wants to. Like, if he wants to spend that time squandering everything he's built up until that point and just looking for idols, that gives him more time to do it. Whereas if he, on day one, isn't physically on the beach because he's off in the jungle somewhere, sticking his hands in trees and climbing up logs or whatever else he's doing to try and find it. I just don't see that as productive.
Well, my question to that would be, what trust in Tony? We saw him get half the votes of the preseason who do you want gone most.
Well, it doesn't need to be a long-term trust, but just I think Tony's useful to my interest in the short term, so I can keep him around for one vote, right? And then we've seen in the past with Sandra, in fact, that making that kind of assumption often doesn't work out very well, and that person ends up sticking around for a lot more votes than you had planned for.
Okay. I don't know. I am definitely a believer that if I am in Tony's shoes or if I'm coaching Tony, like, find that idol above anything else that you could possibly do. I was thinking that Tony wouldn't go to sleep until he had found the idol. And from what I've heard, I listened to Tony talk to Rob on RHAP, and I listened to him. He did a great live chat with Josh Wiggler on Facebook. And from what he said he spent nonstop time looking for the idol, which I think is totally the right idea in his shoes, as we've gone through. So it's just I'm sure the idol must just be buried, or we'll see. I guess we saw in the preview that maybe it wasn't even out there, because now it looks like they're going to start putting them in at challenges. So that just really seems unfortunate. But I definitely would totally defend Tony doing that. And one quick other note about that is Malcolm again gets flagged up giving the confessional about Tony's idol hunting, and he's saying, hey, even though I've been a guy historically big on hidden immunity idols, this time I'm going to focus on relationships instead of freaking people out like Tony's doing. I really think a case is starting to build here for Malcolm, Dom.
I do wonder, though, if this is more in the Spencer mold of he gets a kind of narratorial role where he gets to set the tone for the strategy of the season, but that's not a tone that's really conducive to him winning. So with Spencer, we saw it in the context of, oh, I'm going to learn to be more emotional this time and really connect with people on this deeper level and so on. But that ended up almost being his own demise, because when he did connect with people on that level, they were angry with him when he backstabbed them, and he ended up being forced to make these very difficult decisions between which side he wanted to go with. And I wonder if Malcolm maybe is kind of voicing this out-of-date opinion almost. Although we did say in our preview discussion, maybe this is the next step, right? It's taking a step back. It's not slamming your foot on the gas pedal on day one. It's taking some more time to just let things sink in and see how things go, and then move from there. And then Jeff kind of echoed that in a way in his comments preseason, saying this season starts surprisingly slow, and it's not just a complete bloodbath out of the gates the way you might expect. It actually is just like this weird feeling out period where no one is really acting for a while. And we see him at the end of the premiere saying, like, these were two nearly unanimous votes, and sooner or later this has to stop, right? And we saw Malcolm say that, we saw Tony say that, and this seems to be the consensus view that however peaceful this may seem to be at the moment, it's only a matter of time until things get a lot more crazy pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to look no further than the first two boots this season were Sierra and Tony, and I know we are not going to be the first people to point out that these are like the poster children who voted out their poster mothers of the Big Moves era. It seems like this is not a particularly receptive cast to the idea of Big Moves.
And I hadn't even thought about it in the context of Sierra going home first, but that's almost perfect, right? Like, if that's the theme that you're trying to set with this premiere, Sierra just being executed with no real defense on her behalf is the best way of inaugurating that.
Yeah, definitely. So let's stay on Tony. They go to Nuku on TV, but let's stay on the Mana Tribe quickly. Tony, who becomes definitely the focal point for the remainder of the episode, and with totally good reason, he and Sandra for sure. Tony goes to make a water run, which is actually a spy bunker run here, Don. We've heard a lot about the spy bunker from pregame stuff, and it looks like he's really going for it right next to the tree mail. It looks like he's digging himself a little grave, and then he's going to cover himself up with like sticks and leaves. This is, what did he get stepped on is my big question. It seems like he's right next to them.
To me, this is Tony admitting defeat, because this spy bunker thing, I love it. Strategically and architecturally, it's not a very sound idea, but it's fantastic TV. And so for me, this is an admission that, okay, I don't have a chance to win the game. My time here is probably limited. However, while I am here, I'm going to make it as fun as I possibly can. And props to him for doing that in my book.
Well, I don't think Tony ever conceded defeat. Like, from what I heard from him, he was always, even though he thought it was like 99% that he was definitely screwed, he was always really clinging on to that 1% and trying to get that micro percentage as high up as he possibly could to give himself any chance.
Well, I think it's more that in the event that he sticks around somehow, he doesn't want it to be by just playing timid and begging essentially for three more days so that he can get voted out next round instead. If he wants to stick around, it's going to be by some crazy out of the box turn of events that he had a hand in engineering himself, right?
Okay. Well, Troyzan ends up catching Tony as he's out here digging, and he gives a confessional about how Tony is the idol weasel, and he thinks that Tony's digging for idols, which I guess if you're Tony, is a great cover. No one's going to be on to you digging underground for a spy bunker if they think it's just for idols. We get a fun sequence similar to how the game of telephone, I think that was about like Jay's idol last season or whatever, where Troyzan goes and tells Malcolm. Malcolm then tells Haley, and then we smash cut to Haley telling Aubrey, Michaela, and Sierra about it. And then this is where we get Sierra, who talks about having played with winners before and how she has an advantage in knowing how to navigate with playing like winners with playing with winners like Tony, and she's very excited to teach him a lesson. This is where Sierra really starts to emerge.
Yeah, there's an obvious point here that literally everyone has played with a winner by definition because that's how the game works. But I see what she's saying, that when you have these multiple winners on the same season, you get to see how that like different level of experience plays out almost. But it is ironic that Sierra, after spending most of the preseason coverage talking about how everyone else was out of their depth and had no idea what they were getting themselves in for, and they were getting caught up in a whirlwind, that she ends up kind of never really playing a part in anything in that happens in the season.
Well, Caleb was actually being on a different starting tribe away from not playing with a winner on his season. He would have been gone before.
Okay.
yeah, so he would have been the one person ever to not play with the winner.
Yeah, I think Sierra, so there's a sense in which I think this was inevitable, in that she is always going to be the one putting names out there and trying to ruffle feathers and stir shit up. And so eventually that was going to come back to bite her. But then also you can say, well, you have to mess up pretty royally to get voted out first on a tribe with Sandra and Tony, who end up going after each other. Like, when those are the two biggest threats in the game by far, for Sierra to somehow get booted first. Like, it's not as if it just randomly landed on, I don't know, Haley or something. Like, people actively wanted to vote out Sierra, and there has to be a good reason for that.
Right. No, I agree. And you made the point in one of our preseason podcasts, like, if you are eliminated in the first round and your name is not Tony or Sandra, you screwed up. And I definitely agree with that. But to get into why, like, the reason that I say, hey, if you're Tony, go out there and openly look for the idols. If they see you find it, good. They know it's 100% real. They know that you're definitely not bluffing, and then you definitely have some real ammunition, and that I think Tony just has no control over. He's obviously going to be perceived that way all the time, no matter what. However, Sierra, I think, really hit the ground running here in a spot where there was really no need. I know she has been the poster child of the Big Moves era, but in a tribe like this, I think it definitely had to be a series of unforced errors that got Sierra out here first.
Yeah, this feels like one of those times, and I'm going to be saying this every single episode to the point where it's going to become even more irritating, but I think we're not going to get the full story on this until after the season is over, because it feels to me like no matter what happened, this was always going to be framed in terms of Sandra versus Tony. Like, even if Sandra, in actual fact, had no part to play in what happened, and I'm not saying that's true, but bear with me here for a second. Even if Sandra had nothing to do with what went, also if Tony was actually playing much more, I don't know, restrained game, or maybe an even more outrageous game than was shown, like, everything was always going to be framed in these terms. And so, like, Sierra's story, however short it may have been, was never really going to be told in an accurate fashion.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think any First Boots story is almost never going to be told in an accurate fashion. They have so little time to develop anything beyond why this person is the First Boot, I would say. And so just to quickly wrap on the beginning of the Mana Tribe, this would be the cutoff point of where I'm like, okay, if they were going to give you meaningful content by the time if you're on the Mana Tribe, you would have had it by now. The three people that we have not had either a probes question from or a confessional from are Caleb, who we saw a little bit of as he was going for the toolkit. We saw him fall over on the rocks hilariously, and he was mentioned by name several times. We saw like shots of him several times. By name, as mentioned, being like kind of tight with Tony. The two people who got virtually nothing to this point were Aubrey and Jeff Varner. And in Aubrey's defense, I think she might be, as I said, literally the most recognizable person for the casual viewers. I am nervous, though, about Jeff Varner, who is someone I would otherwise be very high on if he had gotten anything up to this point.
So are you treating the two episodes in the premiere as separate entities for this discussion, or are you grouping them together?
I'm grouping them together, and I will grant happily that Jeff Varner and Aubrey, to a certain extent, get plenty later on, but I really focus on the day one stuff and everything that leads up to that, and to get nothing in as we see the whole season set up and each tribe set up is something I cannot overlook, even in the post-Ken era. So fortunately, Dom, over on the Nuku tribe, all 10 of them ended up getting something that would qualify them there. So it is only those three people from Mana who didn't end up getting anything before the immunity challenge. So that, you hate to see it for those three people, but it's definitely good that everyone on Nuku got at least something.
And it's facetious almost to say that everyone was invited back for a reason, but you invite Varna back is in part because you think he gives these great confessionals and he's a really excellent person to have on your screen. It's not, but based on his first few times, it's not because you think he's going to last especially long, right? So
right.
It's while he's there, you want to make the most of him. So maybe this is almost a good sign for Varna that the fact that they're not showing him early, maybe it means he's just gone next and there was never really time to get anything from him. But maybe it also means that he is going to be there for a while, and so you can afford to have more of a slow burn. You don't need to just pack it in with Varna right out of the gate.
Right. Like, I think that's definitely one possibility that he's gone next. I know I just said I was high on him, but I could also see it. There are several people this week that I am either thinking could go very deep or could very easily be the next one out. And Varna, because he didn't get anything in this opening, definitely starts leaning more and more in the possible next one out for me.
Yeah, we were talking about this the day after the show, Ed, and you had about half the cast listed as either going home next for sure or making a deep run, and I'm not sure who like these middling people who are going out in like the final 11 range are supposed to be anymore.
Okay, well, the people, to put it out there, I think the people that I think are very vulnerable to be the next ones gone, but also have a chance to, hey, this much exposition could have been a good thing. Like, I would be surprised if all of them were gone soon. But Varna, Ciri, and Sandra were the three that stood out to me. And I also think Ty would be on my radar to leave pretty soon, just because all that we really saw from him was JT not liking how much he was feeding the chickens, and then Ciri completely owning his soul. But I guess we'll be getting into all of that as we start talking about the Nuku tribe here. Although one actually closing point on the Aubrey and Varna thing before we start talking about the Nuku tribe is to go back to that process of elimination thing of you bring back people like Aubrey and Varna to be those awesome narrators, and for them to not get anything in the beginning, again, just really does not seem like a great sign for me.
Yeah, I kind of want to apply that same logic that we applied to Varna to Aubrey then, to say, well, again, like, although I guess if you have so many people who could fill that role on the season, so like let's say Aubrey and Varna are both gone quickly, you still have Malcolm, right? Like, you still have these other people who could step in to fill the void. So maybe there is cause for concern, but I'm not going to let you get me down because I'm an optimist, and you know, good things can happen to good people. So
okay.
we can move forward on that basis.
That is consistent with everything I know about you. So all right, so let's actually dive into Nuku now after about 10 pump fakes, and we'll get back into Zeke is going to lead us off for the Nuku tribe, and he is here to slay everyone, but he simultaneously loves his whole tribe. He wants to get his hands dirty, lather himself in the blood of his enemies, and change the game. What did you make of Zeke overall this episode? Because we really didn't see a whole lot more from him, but I mentioned I think this was for someone in his position as the unknown commodity on the team that doesn't go to either tribal council. I thought Zeke had a fine premiere. I think Zeke, this would be, I think Arrow definitely pointing up for me, for Zeke after the premiere, after what I was not expecting. I thought we could easily see Zeke leaving during this premiere based on everything I thought on Twitter preseason.
Yeah, given that he is still here, it was a good premiere for him in my book. I'm more interested in talking about these goats, which apparently were the central focus of the entire Nuku tribe for the first 3 days, because there was this one shot of just the three goats standing there together, which I wonder if that's meant to be like a royal treatment style like metaphor that people like me are going to read way too much into. But like, when we get down to Final Four and it's Haley, Sierra, Troy, Zan, and the one person that all of us are actually rooting for, I'm going to be referencing that, just so you know now.
Yeah, I definitely think that could be in play. Later on, we also saw Culpepper had a quote after his hashtag What Would Monica Do segment. He said, I've got a long way to go, but I think I'm off to the right foot, which I would think would be a great edit for him, and I could see that being the case. But it immediately after he says that cuts right to a goat. I could easily see Brad Culpepper be the losing finalist here, just like Monica was.
Yeah, I think Monica is the new line now. For if someone gets less screen time in an episode than Monica, you know that edit is taking a turn for the worse.
All right, we'll definitely keep track of all of that. What did you think of the quote about to kill a goat, we'd have to kill Ty. Did you think there was anything to that beyond Ty loves animals? Because I thought it was just Ty would not allow us to kill a goat. But I know some people are reading into, Ty being a goat in the Survivor terminology kind of way.
I thought you were going to say some people took it literally and meant like a Lord of the Flies style situation. But no, I mean, that's just Brad, I don't know, cracking a joke or whatever. I reading too much into that is like shamanistic edit reading, which it goes too far even for me.
Yeah. I don't think Brad's saying, well, we could replenish ourselves on the natural resources of the island, but we'd have to sacrifice one of our own.
Well, if Ty doesn't want us to kill the chickens, we could just kill Ty. I mean, there's right. more meat. It might be a bit more stringy, but it's more fulfilling, keeps us energized for longer.
Yeah. Let's check in quickly with Sarah Lucina, who, Dom, describes her own social game as phenomenal. Are you on board with that? Do you feel that Sarah Lucina has demonstrated a phenomenal social game, particularly in that merge episode of Kageyan?
Yeah, phenomenal socially, and also very humble, it turns out. I don't know. Sarah, we saw that scene with her later with Ceree, but that was more just Ceree's gameplay tour, right? Like, she went to Zeke, she went to Sarah, she went to Debbie, or rather Ceree went to Debbie, rather, if we want to be specific. But it felt to me like Sarah, she gets this one good generic confession about how she's switching things up. She's going to be the criminal rather than the cop this time. She's ready to play. And that's all well and good, but that feels like everyone is saying that kind of stuff, and only a few people are going to actually make good on that.
Well, did you feel like her saying, I have a phenomenal social game, was meant for the audience to actually feel like she has a phenomenal social game? Or are we meant to think, LOL at Sarah, thinking she has a phenomenal social game?
I think we're meant to think that. I think the audience, I guess they're just taking her at face value. Like, if someone says, I'm great at this, I mean, in the age of Trump, are we just meant to say, is that the new gospel now?
I mean, Russell Hance was the original Donald Trump on Survivor. Like, it really is a tried and true game plan on the Survivor Island. So I definitely think this is actually maybe something we don't see enough on the show.
And we know that Russell is the greatest of all time. So the story checks out.
Right. So let's, I guess, let's get into Ozzy, who is back now, and he says that big moves require big risks, and he is not sure if he can trust Ceree, not sure, heard it both ways. And she is apparently the first one to go. And by the way, he gives this confessional, as we pointed out right away as we were watching this to our table, he has a full mustache as he's giving this confessional, where on day one, he has a clean-shaven upper lip. However, by the end of day six, he's definitely got a very solid mustache going, so I'm not reading too much into this.
Yeah, that conspiracy theory was strangled in the crib there. But going back to the whole Ceree and Ceree thing, I swear to God, I heard the name Shireen being uttered somewhere in the episode, and I thought I was just driving myself crazy. It turns out Debbie was the crazy one instead, because in her, there was like this 6-second clip with Erin Sebula where she was asked, who is the most dangerous player in the game? And I think she said Shireen. So I think I just heard Debbie being Debbie and just going completely nuts instead of causing my own grasp on reality to explode.
What do you think are the odds that Debbie is not that big of a Survivor fan and has heard of both Ceree and Shireen and is just hedging her bets because she doesn't know which one it is? Like, she's not sure which one's on her tribe.
Maybe she has a bad case of dry mouth.
Right, like Philip Shepherd, yeah. Well, what did you make?
Thanks for explaining my joke, just in case anyone out there wasn't cultured enough to pick up on it.
What did you make of Ceree talking to Ozzy in front of the group and saying, hey, are we cool? You know, 8 years, and he's like, you know, what, from what, 8 years ago? Yeah, we're fine. Where we get that sequence of he then talks to Ty and Ceree then interrogates Ty. What did you make of this whole deal about that drama coming up from fans versus favorites back before?
So you said it, that happened in front of the group. This actually came up a few times for me this episode, but I couldn't tell just how much other people could overhear, because we had that thing later with JT and Ozzy like lying down on the shelter where it felt like it was just in plain view of everyone and anyone could hear them, but they were talking in a way which suggested that they felt like it was in confidence. So I'm not quite sure what was going on there, but yeah, I thought, like, of course they were going to have that conversation at some point. Of course, if Ceree and Ozzy are half competent players, which Ceree certainly is, Drury maybe still out on Ozzy, although I think actually he could do pretty well this season. Obviously, they were going to say what they said. The big question mark here was Ty, who felt the need to just... I love that you have, like, this game of telephone with Ty, who not only doesn't fully understand the social implications of what are being said, maybe, but also has this language barrier, which means anything that you hear from Ty is like doubly unreliable. It's kind of gone through this weird filter before it gets to you.
Well, Ty also has, I don't think we've ever really seen him use it, but he at least can convincingly play off, oh, that's not what I meant to say, or I didn't understand, or whatever. Like, I think he at least has that weapon in his bag of tricks that I don't think I've seen him use. But yeah, this scene of Ceree talking to Ty about, oh, so you got the vibe that Ozzy still felt like there was something to work out, and Ty's pause is all you really need to see. This is just such an unfair fight, right? Like, Ceree and Ty don't belong playing the same game of Survivor. This is totally unfair, David versus Goliath of Survivor here. All right. And interestingly, by the way, this ends with a Ceree confessional about the war's going to start anyway. What difference does it make if it starts tonight or tomorrow? There will be blood anyway. Another confessional about blood now closing out the Nuku tribe after Zeke wanting to lather his hands in the blood of his enemies to start off the Nuku tribe. So maybe some real intense stuff coming here. So I guess let's get into this immunity challenge. It is some big physical endeavor followed by a puzzle. I don't even remember the specifics. But first, Dom, we are going to get into no revotes this year, which Jeff now tells the players right before this immunity challenge. And we finally start seeing Aubrey with some great reaction shots here.
Yeah, it seemed like the cogs were really turning in her head in a way that they maybe weren't for other people. Like, Caleb was just standing there absentmindedly. Ty is just happy to be there and wants to get along to the challenge. And then you saw some of the players like Aubrey and Malcolm thinking, okay, this has big implications and I just have no time to think about it at the moment.
Right. I remember saying, I don't remember who I said it about, but I said, like, jokingly, like, some players, like, what's a revote? And you said, yeah, Caleb's like, what's a vote?
Yeah, he just literally has no frame of reference for it.
Yeah. Well, Andrea is interestingly the one that Probst calls on to comment on this. And this is all that we really saw from Andrea this week. But I think that's fine when Nuku loses both of the challenges. But did you have any Andrea takes based on this premiere other than unfortunate for her that she was the one who walked over the legacy advantage?
It was all very just kind of empty, right? It was kind of classic hosting real material almost, where like Jeff asked this question and she gives this answer, which is perfectly good in TV terms. Like, it flows well. She says it well and so on. But if you think about what she says, it just doesn't mean anything, right? Like, there's no opinion being expressed there. There's no like hot take in either direction. It's just, we need to fill some time and someone needs to answer the question. So let's just go to Andrea because we know she can deliver. And you could argue that's the entire basis for any communication on Survivor, right? Like, we saw Sandra in this episode actually do a very good job of that, where we saw multiple times people would ask her questions like, who do you want to go home and so on? And she would never commit to anything. And like Kim, who we speak of, spoiler alert, as one of the greatest of all time, like, she was notorious for that. Of, you could never get a non-political answer out of her. And I think that's maybe what you should be doing at all times, but as viewers, like, I want to know what people think. I want to see all of these arguments take place in the open, and I think you're not going to get that with Andrea this season, which is a good sign for her, I would argue.
Yeah, no, I think this is, I mean, based on, again, to go back to Sierra and Tony being the people that are apparently not the type of gamers that the others want to see sticking around for long, I think Andrea giving those kind of Blandria political answers to, is that a thing? Is that something, Blandria? Is that...
You've made it a thing now, so okay. Yeah, let's run with it.
Okay, I think that could definitely be totally fine in this season. And the only other thing that I would add about this challenge where Nuku takes a big lead in the physical part and then Varner struggles a bit on the locks is when Varner is struggling on the locks, Probst is, of course, giving him shit. He says, Varner, starting to panic. And Varner says, no, I'm not. I'm cool. And this is certainly not going to be the last time that Probst digs into Varner mid-challenge. But what did you make of that? Is this just Jonathan Penner stuff, like he's got enough of a rapport with Probst? Or this is something, at least for me, that I thought was a good sign for Jeff Varner of, like, it looks like he's panicking, but in fact he's actually got this down, and then he does recover and get the locks undone.
I like to believe that that kind of repartee happens just every single challenge and we only get to see it a few times, in which case put that in there all the time, because there's nothing I love more than seeing Jeff just getting roasted by all of the contestants.
Right. The best thing is Wes commenting on him being on 2.5 men naked or whatever. Like, that's the kind of stuff Survivor needs to be throwing in now that we're getting near 40 seasons.
You could have just said the best thing is Wes and being equally accurate there. But yeah, I didn't read any more into that.
Okay. So Nuku is going to be our immunity challenge number one winner, and we are going to go back to the Mana Beach, where we are going to finally hear more from Jeff Varner, and he really does start to get a lot more visibility here. I just would have liked to have seen this earlier if I thought he was going to be a real solid winner candidate, but he points out he has lost the first immunity challenge all three times that he has played Survivor. He wants to keep the tribe strong. He meets with Tony and Malcolm and Caleb and Aubrey. Quite a dream team here forming for us, I know, Dom. And there's more of that later as they go to their second tribal council. And this is where the Sierra boot really starts to come together. And Varner, we get more from Varner, who says, you talk about game changing, you talk about Sierra. She flips, she forces rocks, she's slick. And this, I think, really did a great service for the episode overall, because I would say this Sierra boot was really straightforward. Like, they really let the audience see it coming in a lot of ways, and then they just roasted me on the second round once I thought I finally had my read secured.
Yeah, they made this cursory effort to say, oh, maybe it could be Michaela instead. Everyone knew it wasn't going to be Michaela, right? Like, the writing was on the wall, even for those people who didn't buy that Michaela was the preordained winner of the season since 10 months ago, right? Like, it was pretty clear that Sierra was gone here, but they kind of went through the motions anyway. And so, yeah, when we had this second vote, which seemed like it was a lot more up in the air, you didn't know, like, did they just revert to old editing patterns and we're meant to go with that? Or is there actually something new brewing under the surface here?
Yeah, to quickly touch on the Michaela thing, I wanted so badly, nothing against Michaela, but just send her out first, do it to me. Embarrass me for the entire, there's no recovering from that. If I spend the entire offseason talking about how Michaela's the winner, I can't save myself from that no matter what I do the rest of the season. I was totally ready for that.
Yeah, you would get to watch a show now without ever having to think about the editing implications ever again. I would get to roast you for eternity for picking Michaela. It would work out well for everyone.
Yeah, it would be perfect. The audience would never have to listen to me ever again. It'd be great. But I do think it is important to note, though, while she did stick around, compared to Aubrey the second time around, we really did get to see Michaela react to being the possible person that might be leaving and not being okay with it. And I think that's important. I think the fact that we saw from her perspective quite a bit here and how she was going to try to save herself and how she was, you know, out there really taking the game seriously, whereas Aubrey, who I would really expect, if she were to go on to be the winner, would be getting a really glowing premiere edit based on how much of a fan favorite I think she was coming into the season. That disparity definitely stands out to me and actually leaves me higher on Michaela than I otherwise would be, probably, just the fact that she got this kind of visibility, even if it wasn't great.
But all routes lead to being higher on Michaela in the end, right?
Of course. There's no such thing as bad publicity for Michaela, I guess, is the point. At this point, until we start hearing people talk about how they don't like her, but we only really heard that from Sierra, and we only saw Sierra end up doing that. We saw people for sure say Michaela can't control her facial expressions or whatever, but she's, you know, she was very upfront about that, and she said, this is what I need to work on.
So do we even have any parting thoughts on Sierra, really? I mean, other than, of course, the bet that we almost made and which I should have followed up on about how many times is Sierra voting out her own mother going to be referenced this season, despite Jeff Varner's best efforts. You know, he really threw you an assist there at the challenge. Capped at a solid 3, I believe, unless something weird happens over the course of the season.
I mean, we may get one capped. We've only had 2, right? Then we may get one in the finale. I get to count the one from the season 33 finale. So this, we only need one more mention of it, like at a final tribal council, like talking about all the game-changing moves. This is, there's still life for me here, Dom.
You're still drawing life somehow, even after she got voted out after the first episode. So maybe this wasn't such a great bet for me after all.
Yeah. Well, as for parting thoughts on Sierra, I am guessing she probably didn't have the greatest kind of meta game for herself entering here, where people obviously viewed her as, you know, one of the biggest move makers and advocates for big moves the show has ever seen. I think had she come in, as we mentioned earlier, and just hung out a little bit and tried to just stay low key, maybe things could have gone differently for her here. But it really did seem like right away she put herself on everyone's radar. And when you're not even that good at challenges, and as we'll see with Tony, even when you are well above replacement level at challenges, all-star seasons, much more so than even general seasons, like, pre-perceptions are reality for a lot of people, and I think Sierra was a big-time victim of that and probably just didn't do herself any favors with the approach that she took. Dom, do you think we'll ever see Sierra Easton back on Survivor for a fourth time, or is that crazy?
I think that's crazy. I I think to be a fourth timer, and I know I'm saying this in a season where Suri is coming back for a fourth time, but I think it really does depend on how your most recent season played out. Because you can imagine, like, let's say someone plays a good enough first season to get invited back, kind of bombs the second season, but then gets invited back for a third time and does really well again. Then maybe that can add as a springboard for a fourth season.
Tyson,
but
for Sierra for now,
right. But now, like, Sierra going out first, I don't know if that momentum is there anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think going out first probably squashes any chance she had, but I don't think Jeff Probst, for sure, will soon forget Sierra Easton, who voted out her own mom. So
rest
I guess,
in peace.
Yeah, R.I.P. If we were tracking visibility here, Dom, through this first half of the episode, the people I would be most concerned about, even more so than Aubrey and Varner, though they would be near the top of my list, how about Troy Zinn and Haley, who were basically nowhere here in this first half, even though they did end up going to Tribal Council? And granted, they were not the biggest characters that the casuals were dying to reconnect with right away.
Troy Zinn felt like a means to an end. Like, he was there in that Sandra scene where Tony either got busted or ended up busting himself, I'm still not quite sure. And then he was kind of floating around the edges of some of the other scenes as well. But yeah, there was no real, like, Troy Zinn moment. There was no loud acclamation that this is actually his island, in case you had forgotten, right? Like, he was just there as a tertiary character. So yeah, not much to write home about from him so far.
Yeah, although I would probably say that Troy Zinn had, or at least he at least came off more grounded might be the wrong word, but he came off with a better overall vibe than I was definitely expecting out of Troy Zinn. And certainly compared to my admittedly low expectations, I would say Troy Zinn had a pretty decent premiere overall compared to what I was expecting. So I guess let's get into this second round now. And this Nuku second round segment is going to be very short. We already talked about how they got the awesome toolkit thanks to Ozzy. JT is going to make them a mansion out of it, and Ty wants to feed all their chickens. And this, Dom, I think let's get into JT a little bit here. This is the only thing we really see from him other than sealing the deal in this challenge, but he is not psyched about Ty taking a lot of the corn for the chickens. He wants to hide the rice so Ty doesn't give that to them too, but he does get to say, hey, I love animals, but this isn't the farm. Like, I still think JT comes across super sympathetic here. What did you think of our boy, Juicy Thick?
Yeah, he did. The thing is, though, the more I see of him in this season and in his pregame stuff and his secret scenes and so on, I'm wondering if maybe we've just been tricking ourselves all along, right? Like, maybe this kind of hyper-strategic cutthroat JT that we imagined maybe was just a figment of our imagination, or maybe it was this guise that he put on for Heroes vs. Villains, which didn't work out, and now he's not adopting it again. Because if you just showed me this season's worth of content for JT, I'd be thinking, okay, he is just like this good old boy. He's this farmer who wants to play with loyalty and so on. I would be fully buying into that. So maybe JT's got me misted, right? Like, maybe JT is so good that even after seeing his previous work, he's able to do that to me. But maybe he has just genuinely, like, changed and settled down and mellowed out or something. I don't know.
Well, I think people would have said very similar things about JT after the first 6 days of Heroes versus Villains. And we saw, once he had the opportunity, he was very willing to make the move. The super aggressive, super forward-thinking move to take out Suri. We didn't get an opportunity to see anything from JT strategically, and I loved what we saw from JT this week. He's very high on my board overall.
And to be fair, the glimpse of him that we get from the preview is him deliberately shipwrecking his entire tribe so that he can go back and look for the idol, which is, I mean, that is Tony levels of bravado if he's able to pull that off.
Yeah, I'm very high on JT based on this premiere. Where are you standing on him? Do you think that he is in there with a legit chance, or do you think that he's coming across not as a sharp enough player in the premiere?
I think in a manner befitting of JT this season, I am cautiously optimistic, but don't really have a strong view just yet.
Okay. One interesting thing that I just realized before we came on air, because I remembered for whatever reason, JT shares a birthday with me, born June 23rd, like all of the great ones. And I realized we are at the point mathematically, Dom, like there's a very famous math, like, theorem or what, it's not a theorem, it's proven, that there's just a math fact that if you just have 30 random people in a room together, it is more likely than not that two of them share a birthday. I don't know if any Survivor winners share a birthday, but we are at the point where we have enough random people that have won Survivor that it is more likely than not mathematically that two of them share a birthday, obviously not counting Sandra, just two unique people share a birthday.
Yeah, I believe the threshold is 23, so we actually reached that point years ago now. But that is a completely irrelevant factoid that's worth noting.
Well, I think it will. I mean, sooner or later, we will get a winner who matches a birthday with someone who's already won, if we haven't already gotten there.
Is this some callback to like the Survivor Oz birthday post from back in the day or something? I mean, what's going on here?
I don't know. Someone find those in the archive and tell me if there are any winners who share a birthday somewhere. All right. Any other?
Or don't. You know, it's entirely up to you.
All right. I guess the only other thing that we really see is Debbie and the whole Cherie thing. We get this sequence of Cherie going around talking to Sarah and Zeke and Debbie, all of whom basically say, yeah, I love Cherie, but no thank you, on the Alliance. What did you make of Cherie overall with that many people basically seeing right through her and rejecting her?
So none of them completely rejected her, right? Like Zeke was saying, I would love to work with Cherie. I'm starstruck by Cherie, but I don't know if I can commit to someone that early who has that kind of reputation. Debbie, I think, does reject her outright, but I think Debbie was always a lost cause, so I don't think that's really a loss for Cherie, or Cherie if you prefer. And then Sarah, I think, did seem to be perfectly on board with it. So I don't think this was like an unqualified disaster for Cherie the way you're maybe making it out to be.
Okay, I'm trying to be misleading and get you to be negative about Cherie so I can be positive about Cherie, because I think she actually had a really good premiere. I think
she was the only thing going on really on that Nuku tribe, other than some like tangential thing about the goats.
Right, and they didn't go to either tribal council, and that's why I'm saying about Cherie the same way I said about Varner, and I will say about Sandra, I think she had a big episode either because she is here to play for a while, or this could quite easily get turned around and she's the one who just leaves next week and they want to get her in there while they can because she's awesome.
Yeah, Debbie sees right through Cherie because she doesn't get paid in dollars, but she does get paid in military training, and she can use that training to recognize when she's being conned. I haven't had any donations in a while, but if you want to donate any military training to us, then mash that donate button, you know, get in touch and let us know.
Definitely. So any other parting takes on Nuku? I guess this is going to be until we'll talk a little later about ultimate winner candidates, and Nuku people may come up there, but I guess this is going to be the end of the Nuku tribe. We're going to swap right away. Winningest tribe in Survivor history, batting 1,000 on the challenge, tied with several others probably.
I guess so. There's really not much more to say, right? Like, we can just get on to the Mana tribe and rock it through that instead.
Right. I mean, it's congratulations to the people on the Nuku tribe for drawing such a physically dominant tribe and getting your pass through the first two rounds.
Right. And we can imagine like this alternate universe where Nuku goes to tribal the first two times, Cherie is already gone, we're mourning the loss of her instead, and like Sandra and Tony are both now reaching the swap and maybe making things happen for themselves. So if you think about like turning points in the game, those two challenges could just be like some of the most important ones, where like you change those results around, the entire course of the season gets flipped on its head.
Right. I mean, if we just change one of those results, Tony is at least still in there, and I think Tony is in a lot better shape swapping onto a tribe of six than he is early in the game when no one has any kind of pre-existing beef on a tribe of 10. I think his physical strength and the opportunity to get another, you know, more days to find an idol or a new beach upon which to find an idol would have been great news for Tony if they could have just won one of those challenges, but nonetheless they could not. And so, Dom, I guess let's get into the rest of this episode, which is essentially just Tony versus Sandra. Tony comes back from their tribal council voting out Sierra, feeling great. He meets with Aubrey by the water well. They want to bring in Malcolm so all these big threats can be protecting each other. Caleb and Sandra also fit that bill. And Dom, the Avengers have assembled. This is the best alliance ever. What could possibly go wrong here? 5 out of 9 equals in.
I love that Tony tried to sell this as like this alliance of all the big threats coming together, and he had to force some reason there for why Caleb was suddenly a big threat, even though he's maybe the least threatening person on the entire tribe other than Haley, I suppose.
Well, he's got quite a six-pack, I think. Caleb's a big-time physical threat, I'm sure, down the line. Although,
of course,
working himself to exhaustion.
Yeah, when he's not fainting in challenges, he's doing well at winning them.
Yeah. Well, Tony famously cannot sleep when he goes to play Survivor, so at night he is up working on the spy bunker until he hears Troyzin and Sandra down on the beach talking. He hears his own name come up, so he confronts them. Or apparently Sandra heard him. Post-game interviews are revealing, Sandra said, hey, fool, what are you doing? And he got up and confronted them. They did not give very compelling lies, I'm going to say, about what they were talking about, even though it was pretty inconspicuous.
Yeah, this felt like willful self-sabotage from both of them here. Because Sandra and Troy actually weren't plotting against Tony, and if Tony was there eavesdropping on them, he would know that, right? But then when Tony confronts them for no good reason, Sandra then has to invent this lie that doesn't even make any sense, which then makes Tony think that actually she is lying to me, so now the two of them have to split apart. So it felt like both of them were kind of playing to their own weaknesses, right? And if they could just keep it under wraps, maybe this dream team could have stayed together for a bit longer.
Right. One thing I'm sure we'll go back to is it really seems like both Tony and Sandra, there's no one the other one should want to keep around more than the other one. Basically, I framed that really poorly, but you know what I'm saying. Like, they are the only possible bigger threats than each other.
And that's why I think, even though, as we'll get on to, Sandra maybe had the best episode that she's ever had from our perspective, I don't know if this is a long-term victory for Sandra, because she gets the result that she wants, but maybe it's a Pyrrhic victory because she needs Tony there as a shield, as someone to deflect that criticism off. And okay, it's great that she's able to get Tony out and the queen says the queen, adios, and so on. But if in, you know, episode 5 she gets voted out because she doesn't have Tony there to distract people, then where did that really get her?
Right. No, exactly. I think you were right that I'm very happy to say that Sandra absolutely exceeded my expectations. This is, as I tweeted out immediately after the episode, I would say pretty easily, with the possible exception of the coach boot in Heroes versus Villains, the strongest work I've ever seen out of Sandra in any round of Survivor.
Although,
but the thing is, the last person she should probably want to have leave is Tony. So if it is Tony's going to leave or you're going to leave, then of course she should want Tony to leave. But if she can have it any other way, she should probably want Tony to stay.
And to the extent that she had a good episode, and I think that she did, it was by doing the exact opposite of this anyone but me motto or philosophy or whatever you want to call it that she always claims to follow. Because like she didn't say anyone but me. She said, I want specifically Tony, even if that means assuming a greater personal risk to myself, and I'm going to go out and get you to vote for Tony, and these are the arguments that I need to make, and this is how I'm going to make all of this happen. And to her credit, she executed that perfectly well from what we saw. But that was a plan that she set up with a specific goal in mind, and that's what I think you have to do. And it's specifically not what she's always been claiming to do in the past, and it's not why a lot of these Sandra fans are saying, oh, this is why she's been so successful historically. So maybe this is like a new turn from Sandra. And I can easily imagine in a few weeks' time, we're saying that like Sandra 3.0 was actually the best Sandra of all of her three seasons, even though she was maybe the least successful.
Oh, I mean, if Sandra goes out next week but goes out really swinging, I could easily see myself saying
I would want her to stay around a bit longer to make that claim, but yeah, I think it's all kind of arguing over the margins there.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess let's get into just quickly the immunity challenge before we get into the rest of how all this Tony versus Sandra fallout, because it's essentially nothing but Tony and Sandra from here. And this is just the immunity challenge where it's the giant snake is tied down underwater, and then there are like puzzle pieces for a combination lock, and then they're going to throw rings to spell out the word immunity. It comes down to Jeff Varner really getting smoked by Jeff Probst as the challenge is going on. The Mana Tribe just gets completely destroyed in the snake portion. Malcolm almost makes an incredible comeback, but chokes just like he always does at the crucial moments and challenges. JT brings it home for Nuku, and Mana is going back to Tribal Council. And the one thing I want to get into before the Tony and Sandra discussion, now that the vote is actually officially on, is we cut back to camp at Michaela, who is furious that she didn't get a chance at the ring toss. She's a strong competitor, and that's why she's here. More just footage of Michaela is not a bad thing.
Okay,
Dom,
we get it.
And I'm wondering if we've really heard a lot from her about her strength being a big piece of why she was brought back. I feel like we could definitely see a Michaela challenge run later on. I could see that being one of the ways that this really ends up with her making a deep run as a big fan favorite.
You think she could turn into Jay, basically?
I think she could be Mike Hala Holloway.
Dear God.
Yeah,
okay.
There you go, kids.
Okay. Moving swiftly on. So that's not even inventive. That's just literally the female form of the name Michael. Like, it's not. There's no ingenuity there whatsoever. That's just Jesus Christ.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here to like the low hanging fruit. It turns out is much easier to pick off the tree, Dom. It's so much easier. I can't believe that more people don't do it. All right. So let's really dive into the Tony and Sandra of it all. Sandra has this new alliance now. They are nervous about Tony finding an idol, and they want to split it between Tony and Aubrey. They tell Tony that Aubrey is the target, but he doesn't think that would leave him in a good spot, so he wants to go back on to Sandra. And I'm curious, do you feel like Tony's downfall? You've mentioned, like, if he could have just kept his cool, it seemed like he did find some kind of footing. Do you think him insisting on it being Sandra was his undoing? Like, could he have gone through with an Aubrey boot here?
It may have been like a David and Zeke style thing where once one person fires the first shot, there's really no going back and it's always going to go into total warfare from there. Yeah, I think after that conversation, and this could be like a typical editing thing where we see that one conversation because it makes sense to use that as the turning point where like Tony was doing so well up until this point and then he played himself, if you like. But I think there was some factor that caused whatever security he had to just fade away, and I don't think there was any recovering from that, and he had to just swing for the fences and hope to get this majority together against Sandra, who I think would be the easiest boot from the other side, because like how is he going to convince people to vote out Aubrey over him, right? Because if there's a majority coming towards his group, then it's always going to be him first, unless there's some weird like jujitsu with an imagined idol,
right? And I was going to bring this up when we were talking about Sandra and her decision earlier and her previous games and like, oh, this might be her best round, is it seemed like both of her first two times she just almost always wanted fair play out and almost always wanted Russell out and just couldn't get people on board with that. It wasn't, no one else wanted to do it and she just cannot convince people. But when everyone already wants to vote out Tony before the game has even started, that is a much easier task to accomplish.
Yeah, so I, unless you think that we're going rogue and actually fully endorsing Sandra here, we're kind of holding back for a little bit, but certainly optimistic based on what we've seen so far.
Right. Although, well, Steven made the point that, like, if Sandra's name truly was in consideration with Tony, why wouldn't you, how do they ever decide to not get rid of Sandra? Like, what does she bring to the table that Tony doesn't, other than not being sketchy when it comes to finding idols?
Well, the argument would be that, like, that's why Sandra is so good, if you think that she is that even when it doesn't make any sense, she's able to shift the target away from herself.
Okay, and I mean, we definitely saw plenty of that. Like, that became Tony's pitch of, like, hey, the fact that you want to vote me out is why you should want to vote Sandra out, because she's got you thinking that way. Like, the fact that you think that means you should not think that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that argument does have some merit, I think. But when you have Tony, who is just this all-encompassing presence, like you can never ignore Tony for as long as he's there, and that's the argument for keeping him, right? Like, maybe it's a Dr. Will thing where the target is so big that it becomes invisible, but like I don't know, like for Sandra, what I would really want to see is a kind of long-term thought that's like, okay, this is what keeping Tony in with all of the risks that involves can add to my game, but this is why voting him out is actually better instead, as opposed to what it seemed to be, which was, you know, Tony was rumbled in one conversation, I can't trust him, so I'm going to vote him out, and the queen's still the queen, and there's no, you know, one winner down, one more to go. Like, it's so hard to actually get inside the head and know what's going on in there.
Right, and I'm sure it goes back to the same thing that people say to themselves every damn time with Sandra, which is, we can get Sandra anytime. She's never going to win the immunity, whatever. Like, whenever it's convenient, we can easily take out Sandra.
Yeah.
Whereas Tony's going to make our life hell if we give him any, you know, an inch of room to breathe. So we get Caleb with a series of confessionals, and this is the real decoy they go into, is about strength. And the reason that I bought into it so much is because they sold the Sierra thing on a very level one way that I was thinking that this was going to be more of the same, but we just heard nonstop strength, 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 that's all that matters. And it really, on rewatch, should have seemed, I think, in retrospect, a lot more clear that Tony was going to leave when all we hear about is the strength, as mentioned, and then also at Tribal Council, we get four people say, oh, I believe Tony, I totally trust Tony. Like, how does he ever stay after that? Like, come on, Colin, of 24 hours, or longer than 24 hours ago, like 5 days ago.
Right, I was expecting it to be, when the votes came out, like, okay, Tony, Sandra, and then just, like, going back and forth. And then, as we said, in the room, when that first Aubrey vote came up, everyone just kind of, like, turned to look at each other. It was, like, it was just complete confusion. And I think if we'd had a second to process it, we'd have worked out, oh, okay, clearly it just must be Tony then. But there was part of us that was thinking, oh my god, are we about to watch this happen at her own premiere party, right? Like, that's would not be a great way to end the evening. But... yeah, I don't know. So obviously, great that Aubrey's still there, but I think long term, like, you don't get votes split onto you by accident on this season, right? Like, you, when people know that they're putting votes on you, they're doing that with a purpose. They're thinking, okay, if Tony does have an idol, this is someone that we're happy with going home instead. So this isn't an accident, right? This isn't one of those times where you just need to write down another name just so there is one out there. This is someone that we do have planned to go next, but maybe not for, you know, one or two votes while Tony's still here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing Aubrey, I'd be curious to hear what people thought about Aubrey in more detail entering the season, but I'm thinking that probably her meta was not perfect for her. Like, I could see them being just afraid, considering how quickly off the heels of the Ko Rong finale this was. Aubrey is the hot new thing on Survivor, and she's been the big strategic player on the most recent season. I could definitely see that not doing her any favors early on, and it did seem like she was one of the people, along with Caleb, who seemed to be viewed as at least more willing to work with Tony, which might have just been a sin in and of itself at that camp. So I guess, Dom, let's get into this tribal council, where we get basically just a lot of smack talk between Tony and Sandra. And then, as I'm 95% certain that Sandra is about to leave, we get, as you mentioned, Tony, Aubrey. And then I'm ready for five votes to come in straight down for Sandra, and the rest of them come in for Tony. At least for me, Dom, and I'm sure for you as well, total heartbreak. But the big question is, what kind of impact does this have on Tony's legacy for you?
So the king is dead. I guess long live the king. I don't think it really changes too much. And this is, so I think with All-Star seasons, this tendency to read too much into the results is always going to be there. And I think we should have committed more strongly pre-season that, like, okay, if Sandra does badly this season, that doesn't automatically validate all of our criticisms of her from before. It means that coming into a season where this is the meta game that's in place, like, okay, maybe Sandra is not good at Survivor, the game where Sandra is known as a two-time winner with all of these other factors in play, as opposed to just Survivor, the general game where all of these skills are permanently going to be relevant.
I think we did say that for the record. I think we said that multiple times, that if she doesn't do well, that will not necessarily feel, I won't feel extra validated. I will completely understand the contextual differences. And if she does really well again, that won't necessarily mean that we've been wrong all this time, and we won't necessarily view her as some great player.
But I think there's a tendency now to say, oh, well, clearly Tony's win was just a fluke, and of course someone who is actually great wouldn't go out second. And then there's been like this backlash towards that, because now, well, of course you're going to say that, and if you're not willing to criticize Tony now, then when would you ever be willing to criticize him? So I think Tony did overplay his hand. I think he did that in a situation where he knew he was in dire straits right from the get-go, and it remains to be seen just how measured, if at all, his aggression would be on like a regular season where he is coming in as an unknown. But I think like there was no way for Tony to dial it back realistically, so he decided, okay, to hell with it, I'm just going to embrace it and go full on. And I don't think it was ever going to work. I didn't expect it to fail this quickly necessarily, but it's not shocking, right?
No, I mean, I think, as I said preseason, I think Tony and Sandra, maybe the only person in Survivor history with a bigger target entering a season was Richard Hatch entering All-Stars. There, he was hopeless to make it through one tribal council. I'm surprised Tony even made it through one. I think his early exit here is completely a testament to how amazing his first game was. And he won Cagayan by playing such an incredible, dynamic, aggressive game. Of course, that is going to impact tremendously how people are going to view him on his second time out. But I don't think it's like Tony should have played differently in Cagayan, banking on playing multiple times or anything ridiculous like that. For me, Tony goes down absolutely nothing. I think this is purely a testament to how incredible he was in Cagayan. I really hope, just in hearing Tony, it seems like he's a little down on himself and how he did out there. I really hope that in time he can see that this is, as far as I'm concerned, nothing but a compliment from the other players of, we cannot run the risk of Tony doing it to us again. As you said, the king is dead. Long live the king, though. I am Team TV forever. I definitely will not be docking Tony any points at all for going out this early in an All-Star season. There's nothing virtually anyone can do to lose points for me in an All-Star season, other than something totally extreme. I think people can only really go up in All-Star seasons. It's a totally different game when people know who you are and how you play.
Yeah, and in the same vein, so the criticisms that we made about Sierra, like going out first, I think to some extent, okay, you can say these are the flaws that Sierra has in her game, and sometimes those flaws are going to be manifested in the results, right? So like when they get to the challenge and Jeff goes through his usual ritual of like, Nuku getting your first look at the new mana tribe, Sierra voted out the first tribal council. There was no exaggerated gasp. There was no.
I knew it. That's what it was.
Great discussions, right? It was just shrugging their shoulders and like, yeah, that makes sense, right? Like no one was surprised. But I don't think that's because they thought Sierra was a bad player. It's just they knew how she was being perceived and the fact that that was going to catch up to her at some point or another was not, you know, that was not new to anybody.
Right. Yeah. Someone literally says, I knew it. Like, yeah, she's not great in challenges. She's super sketchy. She voted out her own mom. Story checks out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into, to close on the tribal council, of course, we have to talk about on Tony's way out, he and Sandra got into a little bit. What did you make of this? Was this good for Sandra? Bad for Sandra? Is this her defending herself? Is this her deflecting the shade that he's trying to throw on her? Or is this her just losing her temper?
All of the above, maybe. So in the moment, I thought it was a little bit, not classless, but just a bit over the top. But looking back, like Tony tried to call her out and she responded in kind. I think it's just good natured banter. It seems like the two of them are on pretty good terms now. It's, you know, I think Sandra was very, very much keeping true to her brand with the whole the queen stays the queen thing. Like, we heard that specific phrase like four different times in the same episode. I get the sense that when she played the first time, obviously the whole like TV social media landscape was very different in 2003, and so was Sandra. And then the second time for Heroes versus Villains, I never got the sense that she was, you know, she was playing to the camera, she was trying to make good TV, but she wasn't crafting this persona for herself in the same way, if that makes sense. Whereas this time around, we need to keep a running total of how often we hear the phrase "the queen says the queen," because I there's some kind of side bet on that is absolutely necessary. She's very in tune with her brand, or Brandra, as you insisted on calling it to Aubrey.
Blandria and Brandra. That's good stuff. Sorry, I'm so distracted by that incredible wordplay that I forgot what I was going to say. Even if she is out next next week, that we are going to hear the queen stays the queen like six times even then.
Yeah, you being distracted by that brilliant wordplay is you laughing at your own joke, just for the record. This is something that you said at the time in which Aubrey does not seem especially amused by.
Oh, I forgot that I said that. I didn't realize that I said that. That's really good stuff, though. All right.
It's fun. Please tell me more about how good your joke was, but by all means.
Seriously. So I guess, Dom, next time we are going to be swapping into three tribes. We don't know what those tribes are for sure, although Reddit is on top of this, where we apparently can see from the preview for the next week who is on the new Nuku tribe. So let's get into that in one moment, although I think that may be something that most people don't want to hear about. So I want to get just a couple other things maybe out of the way before we get into that. And just quickly off the top is we didn't see the new vote split rule play any kind of role this week. Like, we saw Sandra cast that extra vote for Aubrey to play around it, but it wasn't a situation where anyone could have done anything different to like force a tie. That will certainly be something that becomes a much bigger talking point, I'm sure, as the season progresses. And I want to give a quick shout out to Curtis Morrison, who emailed us this incredible spreadsheet of all of the different scenarios for how all of these split vote situations have now changed based on who has what for different kinds of numbers. So definitely interested in how all of that is going to end up playing out in future rounds. And a big shout out to Curtis for doing the basic legwork for us on that. And I think that is going to be definitely just something that we will certainly be tracking and going forward in this season, just not overly relevant today. So anything else you want to get out there before we get into the more, I don't want to say spoilery, because I think it's even purely just speculation still at this point. But anything else before we get into that?
We don't want to interrupt the monologue, but yeah, I don't think I have anything else.
Okay. I guess if you don't want to hear about this, Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV, and I am on Twitter at Colin Stone. And I'm sure everyone, that is brand new information for them. So it seems like what we are looking at for the new Nuku tribe, and this is the end of the spoiler alert, by the way, is we are looking at Aubrey, Jeff Varner, Malcolm, Michaela, Sandra, and JT. So right away, a pretty physical team minus Sandra, I would say. I could see this being a tribe that probably doesn't even go to a tribal council.
Well, so I guess it's more a question of who your weakest players are and how much they are a hindrance to the overall team, especially when you have these rather smaller tribes. So like Sandra, for instance, could be an anchor around their neck. So could Jeff Varner.
Yeah, I realize I skipped over Jeff Varner, who got slaughtered by Probst in the challenges. So maybe this could be a tribe that goes to tribal council quickly.
Yeah, the two of them are getting sat out at every single opportunity, and then they're going to have to find creative ways to make their weaknesses not matter in the challenges they do have to play.
So any new pairings you're looking forward to seeing on this new Nuku tribe? We have Aubrey and Malcolm potentially carrying over a little bit. I think that could definitely be in play. Michaela could be interesting. Sandra is certainly interesting. And then we have JT and Jeff Varner. I think this could be a really exciting tribe.
Yeah, I think Aubrey and Malcolm is the most exciting pairing on that tribe, maybe. I'm curious to see what the state of affairs is with Sandra and JT, if they're able to reach this kind of détente or rapport or some other French word that means something or other. And then I wonder where Michaela fits in. She seems to be this kind of free agent almost, as she was with Sandra at the beginning. I wonder if Sandra's just going to target Aubrey again, or maybe if, like, I wonder if Malcolm could be forced into like the kind of Cameron position where, like, if Aubrey becomes the new Corinne and the two of them are kind of outcasts on that tribe, and he finds himself being kind of lumped in by association almost. But yeah, like, I could see if like Sandra, Michaela, and Jeff Varner join up, let's say, and just try and take out the two of them. Maybe JT just comes along for the ride, or maybe like JT and Aubrey buddy up, or I can see JT and Malcolm actually getting along famously as well. So I think JT could be an interesting swing vote actually there.
Yeah, I definitely think this tribe probably looks like good news for... It's certainly, I don't think there's any tribe draw Sandra could draw where it's going to look like good news for her now that Tony's out of the game, or even if Tony was still in the game. This probably, I would say, the biggest winner out of this tribe draw is Aubrey, who was clearly, along with Tony on the bottom of her tribe. It seems to me like she is probably in a much better position now with Sandra on her tribe here as well. Okay. So the other tribes that, and these aren't even confirmed, by the way, these might be slightly off, but it looks like, and I'll give a shout out to the Reddit user. It is Jeff Coaster. It appears strong work here. Jeff Coaster, the new Mana tribe. It is apparently going to be Andrea, Brad Culpepper, Sari, Sierra, Caleb, and then either Zeke or Ty. It's unclear which of Zeke or Ty is on which tribe. But for me, the Sari tribe is always going to be interesting, but I'm not really sure who I'm like pumped to see Sari try to make an alliance with there. This seems like it could be very bad news for Sari.
So I think there's room for Sari and Zeke still. Sari and Andrea, I think, because you know, Andrea talked about how much he loves Sari. And yeah, I don't know. I'm getting bad vibes about like Brad, Caleb, and Sierra just teaming up and running over the tribe somehow.
Yeah, I think that is in play. I don't know. I think this could be, with the exception of Sari, potentially the tribe that runs the table in the challenges. And I would love to see that happen for Sari, especially if she can win one and then start sitting out.
Yeah, although that said, in this other tribe, which by process of elimination would be Debbie, Ozzy, Sarah, Ty, Haley, and Troyzan, there's no obvious weak links there in the challenges either. And you have Ozzy in reality, who is this fantastic challenge competitor, and then Troyzan in his own mind, who is also this great challenge competitor. So yeah, I think those two tribes should be fairly competitive too.
Yeah, I love the way that they identified this was with this great screenshot where, like, to me, the only discernible person is Ozzy with his camo shirt. And then they get like, that's Troyzan because he has the Livestrong bracelet. And that's Sarah that's Haley because she's the only one with arms that thin. It's like incredible. Like, they just find these blurs and can pick out who's who.
Yeah, Reddit, not always the best place for constructive, reasoned discussion, but if you want them to, like, locate hostages or something, they're perfect for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Dom, I think the only thing to close out on is who we think is looking good here, and I will lead off. I don't know if this is going to come as a big surprise to people. My number one after this episode, Malcolm, even including Michaela. Yeah. I think Malcolm had a tremendous episode. Are you on board with that?
Yeah, I can't find anything to disagree with there, to be honest.
Yeah, I would probably then, just because still of all the preseason stuff, I think give me still Michaela at number two. And then I really think, how about JT for me at number three? Is that crazy to you? I really think he got some good stuff this week.
I want it to be true, but we just haven't seen enough yet.
Who else have we seen enough from other than Ceri? We saw a lot of, and then maybe even Zeke, I think, would be a possible person who's in play for me here.
Where is Sandra for you?
I think Sandra, realistically, there's certainly plenty of upside. Like, I think it is in the realm of possibility that Sandra makes a deep run. I doubt she wins. Most realistically for me, I think Sandra just got her big moment in the sun, her big defeat of Tony, until she is about to get probably quite quickly unceremoniously booted for very obvious reasons. I think this was Sandra's big splash on the season, and then the queen is no longer going to stay the queen after next week, potentially as soon as next week.
Yeah, it has been pointed out a lot that when you have these early feuds that seem to define a season, one person naturally always wins that feud, but that person never seems to have a great long-term future. That it seems to be like a distraction while the actual successful players on that team do their thing.
And
obviously, I mean, successful in the context of the season, because Sandra, historically, in case you weren't aware, is the most successful contestant of all time. However, you know, I think she's going to get her victory over Tony, and Tony will not be usurping her throne. But I don't know if she's going to get to defend that throne for much longer.
Right. I think she's saying, say hi to Sierra for me as Tony's on his way out. I think she's going to get to say hi to Sierra herself fairly soon. I think that's going to be a nice reunion coming up for Sandra.
I could see her making the merge. And Sandra as a juror is an interesting concept.
That would be very exciting stuff. How do you think Sandra would be as a juror, as someone who has won the game in the manner that she did twice? Do you think she would even consider like who controlled any votes?
I think she would be just voting for who she liked more, and I think that's perfectly fine, because I think she would at least be honest about it, and she wouldn't try to invent this rationale or excuse for why actually, you know, the person they're not voting for committed all of these terrible sins in the game or something.
Right. To answer a question that I asked you a while ago and didn't give my own take on, when Sandra was yelling at Tony on his way out, I think that's just Sandra saying whatever the hell is on her mind, like she always does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dom, anything else that we even want to be getting to this week? I know it was a big premiere. I know it's late here. You're on the East Coast, so I don't even have to tell you what time it is on the East Coast.
Yeah, if I was back in an actual regular person time, then it would be Tuesday morning by now. I'm not sure what this qualifies as. But...
good news. It is Tuesday morning now. We're past midnight.
Sure, we'll go with that.
I don't know. Time change, it's all very, very complicated stuff. The clocks just changed. I don't know. All right, but Dom, I guess until next week, and incidentally, we will definitely be trying to do these much earlier. We just had a bunch of things go wrong that had to push this back a little this week. But we will be back shortly talking about episode 2, episode 3. I'm going with episode 2. Next week is episode 2. Let's not all get confused about that. We will be back to talk about that. Until then, I am on Twitter at Colin Stone. Dom is at DomHRV. Anything else you want to add before we take off?
No, other than thanks everyone for listening. Thanks everyone again at the premiere party who made it such a great evening, and thank you in advance to everyone who's going to be at Know It All's, hopefully introducing themselves and making that a very fun evening as well.
Absolutely. All right, we will talk to you very soon. Take care, everybody.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings. I'm not proud of my address. In a torn up town, no postcode envy. But every song's like gold teeth, Grey Goose tripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams, but everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece. Islands, tigers on a gold leash, we don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. It don't run in our blood, that kind of luck just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. You can call me Queen Bee. Let me live that fantasy.